Hello and welcome to episode number 24 of Light the Eye. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
We're presented by the U of I Credit Union. And coming up, Robert's back from a trip to California. I'm back from a second week of baseball. And together, we're going to look at what the weekend was in Illini sports. A one-point loss to UCLA. An upset win for Illinois baseball and wherever else the conversation may take us. You okay there, Robert?
I'm still a little stressed about the fact that the eye won't turn orange. It has me feeling blue, which is the color we will see on the eye when we turn it on. I'm gonna work through it. This is my baby. I got to be careful with this thing.
I just want you to know, when I turned on the eye, I never had any problems.
Yes, that's a good point. Maybe it's user error.
It all comes down to the last second here. Let's see how the execution goes in the final moment.
I wonder if I can go coast to coast in 4.9 seconds. Well, we were coast to coast. You were on the Atlantic. I was on the Pacific. Let's tie it all together and light the eye, should we?
Good luck.
All right, here we go. What happens?
Oh! Robert? First of all, our music, our theme music, the title of that song, you can give the history if you want, but it's All Burns Down.
Yes.
And I stress to you, let's not use the lyrics, not because I don't...
Sure.
Not because they're bad lyrics or it's a bad song, but it just doesn't seem like... The tune is more what we were interested in this case as an intro
yes.
to a podcast than,
yes.
than the lyrics. And All Burns Down... may reflect the sentiment of some fans' expressions that I read and listened to since the Illinois basketball game at UCLA.
Yes.
I don't know if that's an exaggeration. I'm just saying that's how some people felt.
It was let's say it was a old school Illini Twitter moment where suddenly everyone is angry again and nothing is right in the world and everything is everyone's fault. It felt like the 2010s all over again.
Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask you for your take on the week, but I'm only going to give you 4.9 seconds.
You know, I think the episode title here needs to be Coast to Coast because you were on the East Coast, I was on the West Coast, and Mr. Dent went coast to coast.
All I got to do to stop you is just interrupt you once.
Yes.
You will not be able to finish your story. I know.
Yes.
That you can't really get a sentence done in 4.9 seconds.
You know what I think you should do? You should just station yourself right at the rim and just go for blocking the any last second Tyus Edney attempts.
Let me ask you this. There's multiple ways that people look at close losses in any sport.
Yeah.
I have heard people insist the game was determined with the last play.
Yes.
And I get that. And then there's the other school, which would be, no, the game was determined by any number of things that happened. A missed shot in the first 5 minutes of the ball game counts for the same as a missed shot towards the end. The context is a 23-point lead in the first half, and UCLA comes back. So I don't know how you like to frame this thing, but forever it will be remembered as Dent went coast to coast, and the Illini kind of stood there and didn't really put up any resistance.
Yeah.
But is that really the game in your mind?
No, because when you have a 23-point lead and you blow that lead, that's the game story. Final shot or not, that's going to be the story.
Go back to Arizona in 05.
Okay.
Wildcat fans who remember that game are probably going to remember 15 points with 4 minutes left and we blew it.
Yes. Yes.
Illinois fans will remember down 15 with 4 minutes left, came back, Darren Williams ties it with a three.
Yep.
And overtime.
Yes. The way I look at what you're talking about, is it an individual play? Or, you know, I saw a lot of people after the game of like, you know, if David Mirkovic doesn't foul the guy with 0.6 seconds left in the first half and he gets 3 points on just a desperation heave, well, there's 3 points that would have really mattered in the game. So, yes, you can go through a game like that. The way I tend to look at this is now this is four of these games that came down to one of those one things, and you would think one of those would kind of go Illinois' way at some point. You know, they've won 13 Big Ten games by an average of 16 points in their 13 Big Ten wins, and they've lost last-second buzzer beater by Nebraska, in overtime to Michigan State, in overtime to Wisconsin, and on an overtime buzzer beater against UCLA. So it's one of those, you would hope that in the four really close games, two would maybe fall in Illinois' favor and two wouldn't. You know, the way to avoid losing those is to win by 10, and if it's going to be close, you're going to get nipped at the line sometimes, but getting nipped at the line all four times is really, really rough.
Yeah, but does that that was four coin flips and they all turned up tails instead mm-hmm. of heads.
Yeah.
Or is there something to it?
I mean, let's take it to football for a second. Shocking, I know. Illinois in one score games of football the last two seasons, 9-1. Okay. There's a big reason Illinois football is 9-1 in those games, and his name was Luke Altmaier. And he was, his statistics in the final 2 minutes of a game, his statistics on final drives was just exceptional. And so it's the, even the staunchest statisticians will look at something like that and say, look, yes, there's randomness. No, what people think is clutch is just somebody, just a random hit happening at a certain time. But if you have a really good quarterback in a football game, you can win a lot of close games because they will make the plays on the final drive and make that tilt in your favor. And that's what Illinois had with Luke Altmaier. But it just feels like, I wrote about this after the game, it just feels like this is the opposite of what we've seen with football. Football had three close games this year. USC, I mean, Northwestern was close. It was a 7-point win, but it was still close. And then, the bowl game. And all three of those games tilted in Illinois' favor. And now Illinois basketball has had these four very close games, the only one-score games of the year, and have lost all four. So it's a tough, it's like the opposite. It's everything was going your way the last 2 years on the football field. And if we combine this with Tennessee and every other close games the previous season for the last 2 years with Illinois basketball, for whatever reason, the close games are tilting away.
Well, the concern becomes, in tournament play, games tend to be close.
Yep.
First and second round, there's probably more blowouts or wide margins, at least, from a high seed. And Illinois, we'll talk about that in a second, but Illinois will still be a high seed, a two or a three, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So for argument's sake, I know early exits happen, but you can conceivably be favored by double-digit points in the first two rounds, right?
Yes, yes.
After that, they're all close.
Yeah.
And the question will be, what happens to an Illinois team when it's close in the second half of tournament play and do or die?
Yep. It's a great, great question. You know, how much of it, there's two schools of thought, right? And they're exact opposites. One is you kind of want the losses to happen now because regression to the mean and, you know, look, the great example of this one-score game thing is the Kansas City Chiefs, right? They go 11-0 in one-score games in 2024, and then they went 1-9 this year and had a terrible season. So, like, when you're 11-0 in very close games, yeah, you're getting some fortune where things are falling your way, and it might not soon. And then when you're 1-9, you've had a little bad luck in those close games. Now, is there reasons and ways to look at all of that? Yes. So there is this thought of like, hey, let's get all the loss side of these one-score games out of the way now so that in the tournament it's like,
because there's a predetermined amount
no,
of one-score losses that you'll have?
It's just the whole, you know, when you flip a coin, you know, it's the gambler's fallacy is really what we're talking about here. You flip a coin, you know, you've got 10 heads in a row, and the gambler wants to bet on that 11th being tails because, oh, it's been 10 heads in a row. Tails
are
coming.
They're, but quote, it's still, due.
It's still a 50-50 thing. But then there's also statistical things of regression to the mean. Look at it in this game. UCLA, the best way that I can frame the 23-point comeback is it's a 13-10 game. UCLA then misses 11 shots in a row and turns it over, I think, four times in there. Illinois goes on a 20-0 run while they just can't hit the broadside of a barn, and suddenly it's 33-10, from 13-10 to 33-10. Then UCLA hits 18 of their next 20 shots, like 90% from the field, and we're tied 48-48 or 58-58, whatever they reached to tie the game up there. On one side, you could say Illinois got up big and just coasted. On another side, you could say, look, they were, you know, it's, the funny thing is they missed 11 shots in a row and then made 11 shots in a row. So it's like, well, they shot 50%. Mm-hmm. It was just 0 for 11 and then 11 for 11. And if you take the randomness of sport and you mix those up in a different game and they're just like, okay, well, they hit 5 of 11 and then they hit 6 of 11, then the game is never more than 4 or 6 points in either direction through that whole span. If you take it 0 and 11 and 11 and 0, well, you're down by 23 and then you're tied. So it's just one of those random kind of things. And so eventually one would hope that, you know, look, close games for the Chiefs, everybody was saying that's going to change. They went 11-0 in close games. That's going to change. What happens the next season for the Chiefs? 1-9 in one score games.
It's interesting you are presenting this side of things.
Yes.
The analytical,
yes,
statistical, mm-hmm, randomness of sports side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm looking at it a little differently.
Okay.
And that's just that Illinois was up by 23 points and they took their foot off the gas.
Yes.
And
up
executing
by 12 against Michigan State and up by 9 late against Wisconsin. Like, this is a trend.
Yeah. So I think there's the human factor in this.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the human factor of what was going on for UCLA. The head coach had come out and done some version of a mea culpa.
Yes.
Look, I want you to know, yes, I've apologized to him.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm aggressively telling you,
yes,
that I'm apologizing for my actions.
Yes.
But you had that. They're a bubble team. They're desperate for a win. They're very good at home.
Mm-hmm.
Indiana's the only team that's won in there. And mm-hmm, I think that was an overtime game,
mm-hmm,
at Pauley. So Illinois this year has done a number of knockout punches in the first half. Rutgers, wasn't there a 20-0 run in there? Minnesota, I'm trying to think of somebody else, where they just, you know, the game was in hand. And even when they let up a little bit in the second half, it just stayed in their control.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but wonder if that's in the back of your mind when you're up 23 points and you think we've already beaten them psychologically. We've pounded them into submission. And UCLA got back off the mat.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And guess what? Mick Cronin values defense.
Mm-hmm.
Just, yes, about as much as Brad Underwood does.
Yep.
If not more. So I don't know if that's a true statement. I'm just saying.
I understand.
They're both, yeah, guys that hang their hats on defense. So there was an inevitability to this whole thing on that. So what it comes down to is, when it's become a pattern of close losses,
mm-hmm,
something has to be examined there.
Yes.
And everyone is going to examine the last 4.9 seconds, which was any number of anything else but what you did.
Right.
Do that.
Yes. It's funny. I enjoy this conversation so much because it is the divide between, let's call it, the analytical world and the, you know, emotional world of sports. And let's use clutch in baseball. A guy's a 300 hitter, comes up in the ninth, two on, two out, tie game, gets a single. The emotional side says, this is a clutch guy. He locked in the moment. Okay. His batting average with runners in scoring position is higher. There is such a thing as the guy who can lock in that moment and the guy whose knees are shaking and he doesn't want that moment and he strikes out, and the history of him shows that he's just not good in these clutch situations. We'll call it the Bill James side of things. The analytical side is he's a 300 hitter. He's going to get hits 3 out of every 10 times at the plate. That just happened to be one of the 3 times. You know, if it was a different time, he's going to strike out, or he, you know, all the things that he does, the odds are 30% chance he gets a hit there. And it doesn't change or go up or go down because of the situation. You know, there are a lot of people out there who's like, there's no such thing as clutch. It's randomness. And we put clutch onto things because we like narratives around sports.
We do. But Io DeSumo is remembered as a 100% closer.
Great example. Yes.
Right now on this team, and this is by no means a criticism from me.
Yes.
I am just saying I don't know who the closer is.
Yes.
Illinois hasn't had to do that in a sense. You trust almost anybody on the team, in this particular team, yep, with a last second shot because yep, there's so many shooters on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But who is sort of, you kind of, your first thought probably is to Keaton.
Yep.
He's also a true freshman.
Mm-hmm.
He has hardly blinked this year.
Yep.
So if you're going to be skeptical of it because he's a freshman, I think he's proven you wrong for the most part.
Yep.
But it's just, when the moment got tight in the Io era, everybody knew who the ball was going to, and that guy was okay with it.
Yes, yes.
So in this case, you could draw up 10 different scenarios,
mm-hmm,
but they just haven't had to do that. They haven't executed that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's come down to it, it's also been the one missed rebound.
Yes. Yes.
Michigan State, one offensive rebound away.
Wisconsin was also an offensive rebound.
Yep.
Yep.
And, you know, instead Michigan State shovels it out.
Yep.
This was a defensive rebound. If Andre Stojakovic is a little more aggressive,
mm-hmm,
in securing that basketball.
Yes.
It's really hard to judge somebody watching a replay from a couch or a hotel room.
Yes.
To go, well, you were not very hard, didn't give, yeah, a hard effort on that.
Yep.
But it just looked like he expected it,
yep,
to be coming his way instead of saying, I've got to go make sure that's mine.
Yes. And there's, let me bring another side into this. Illinois goes and plays 2 games against, at least statistically and in brackets and everything else, going into the week, UCLA and USC were about even in terms of what the committee thought of them in terms of where they were in KenPom before the beginning of the week. Now, USC lost twice and UCLA won this game, so they've separated a little bit. But let's just say they were somewhat similar teams. You go in against those teams and you score 195 points and give up 160, something like that. I believe it was 195, 160. What the analytical world will say is, in this whole thing of randomness, those could have been 2 15-point wins against similar teams on the road. And it just so happened that one was a 1-point loss and one was a 35-point win.
You know, we have a whole group of people consuming this right now who are going, why are you talking about analytics?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you understand that Illinois kind of really just melted down?
That's why I enjoy this debate so much. Because
where's your outrage?
Okay.
Where is, yes, your how could you?
Mm-hmm.
And I expect, and there's my, I was hoping for St. Louis to Chicago to Indianapolis.
Someone once told me that I'm this conundrum to them because I'm a narratives guy through and through. I write narratives. I live in this narratives world. And yet I'm also this analytics guy who, you know, can sit here and say, well, it's just a random chance that they lost one of those games by one and won the other. Play these games again and you win both by 16 or whatever, you know. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that that's what the outcome would be. I'm saying that the reason Illinois is still number four in KenPom and everything else is because that's how that whole world is based on the look, a team that has this much offensive efficiency and this and that, the randomness of losing games by one and then winning by 30 and then losing by two and winning by 18 will eventually work itself out to, like, that's the team that bettors are going to be behind. That's the team that everybody's going to be behind, because some of these, we'll call it anomalies of play that game 10 times, Illinois beats UCLA 8 of 10. All these anomalies will eventually iron themselves out. And so that's the conundrum with this team right now, right? Could have won the Big Ten. Could have made this Michigan game everything in the world. Could have been like number two against number four on Friday night. But Illinois lost these four, you know. What's the stat? Illinois has been tied with 0.9 seconds left of every Big Ten, or has not trailed with 1 second left in any game since UConn. Like, all four of these games, it was a tie game with 1 second left.
Wow.
I mean, that's insane.
Or leading.
Yes. Yes. Tied or leading in every game this year with 1 second left. That should be something like 17-1 in the Big Ten, or 16-1 in the Big Ten, Illinois playing 16-1 in the Big Ten, Michigan on Friday night. It's not, and Michigan has the chance to, they can win clinch at least a tie for the Big Ten against Minnesota tomorrow, or they can, you know, clinch it outright on Friday night. So it's a shame that that's not the way this season has gone. But the reason KenPom still thinks it's a top four team, the reason bettors will still have Illinois as one of the top five teams to win it all, is because of those analytics, because they look at those numbers and we're like, oh, look, when they get nipped, it's right at the line, and they win substantially. That's a team to get behind in March, because they can put up the numbers, to go on a six-game run.
Are you saying that it's all random, that they've gotten nipped at the line four times?
No, because I believe in Io, and I believe that I believe in Luke Altmaier, and I believe that the 9-1 wasn't just random for Illinois football in the close games, because you had a quarterback who could win. You know, how many game-winning drives did he have? And because Io won all of those close games, Michigan State, you know, Wisconsin. So many games.
Was that Frazier? But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even when he came back from the broken nose and he made the shot against Penn State, which was a close game. So, yes, he was Mr. Clutch, and I believe in that. And if we had somebody who was closing games like that, it would be a different story. So I live in the in-between there, right? Like, I believe in Clutch, but I also believe, like, there's still a lot more hope for this team, because the only losses. When I wrote about this the other day, I used UCF as an example. UCF has beaten Kansas, and they have a couple, like, really nice wins. But when they win, like, they're beating bad teams by three or two or one. And when they lose, they're losing to Houston by 30, and they're losing to Iowa State by 26 and this and that. Bettors will look at that and be like, look, this is like a 15-12 team that is somehow 18-8. You know, they've just – that's not somebody to follow through the tournament, because they are inches away from not even being a tournament team. You know, you beat Akron by two, you beat Utah by one, all this kind of stuff. So in that world, the bettors trust the teams that are, like, dominating games and then maybe just getting clipped by 1 or 2 points. And so that's what Illinois is. It's a shame. I really wanted this Friday night game to be for all the marbles. And now it's, please don't let them clinch it outright on our floor, because I will struggle to get out of my chair and leave the arena. But that's where we're at. It's a shame that all four of these games have gone the way they were.
We should shout out Keaton Wagler. A bit overshadowed in the loss is the fact that he has scored the most points by an Illinois freshman in history, surpassing the 494 scored in one season by Corey Bradford in 1998 and Kasparis Iakonchonis last season. So Keaton Wagler, by far and away, having the most superior offensive season for an Illinois player ever as a freshman. By the way, David Mirkovich would be saying something about that.
Yes.
But
yes.
Incredible story. And we've talked about it ad nauseum. I just wanted to make sure it didn't go unmentioned here on the pod.
And led the team in scoring, rebounding, and assists, right, the other night? He led the team in scoring. I think he was top rebounder and top assist man. So, true freshman on the road at UCLA, tough place to play, and he leads the team in points, rebounds, and assists.
Mr. Analytics?
Yes.
I have a thought to pass on.
Hit me.
This came from Mike LaTulip on the post-game show on WDWS.
Mm-hmm.
And he admits this is probably an insane idea. But as they were breaking down, what are the other options that you have there with 4.9 left? He goes, he presented a couple of options. But the third option, he said, is, I'm going to say this is insane, but I wouldn't be surprised if in 5 or 10 years, analytics will look back at it and say that this is now how we do things. 4.9 seconds. What if you foul?
Hmm.
Very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now let's say it's 4.3 seconds. What are the outcomes there? First, it depends on what bonus you're in.
Yep.
But let's say you're in the double.
Mm-hmm.
You miss both, and you get the ball back in either a broken court or if you have a timeout to set something up yourself.
Yep.
You're now in the – well, you're in the lead. They yes. now have to foul you. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
He makes one of two. You're now in that scenario.
You can or take if the makes, shot or,
yeah.
or it goes to another overtime.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or if he makes both. There's now 4.3 seconds left, and assuming you have a timeout, you mm-hmm. call the timeout, and now you have a chance to set up a coast-to-coast, or they would have to foul you.
Yeah. Very interesting. That's very interesting.
Insane. Nobody does that right
yes,
now.
Yes, obviously. Yes. But, yeah, you foul a 70% shooter, two free throws at 70% chance that guy makes them. So there's a decent chance they don't take the lead. Or if they do, you have the ability to maybe do the same.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe go coast
because
to coast.
What's it's back to the football thing.
Yes.
Where in the USC game was the classic example. Oh, they scored. USC scored too soon, giving Luke Altmyer the ball back.
Yes.
And I don't know what the statistics are in football. It seems that favors mm-hmm. the team with the ball, even if they're behind.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say free throws are like the equivalent of field goals in football, high percentage.
Yeah.
Maybe you figure out a way to sort of, quote, let them score without time expiring and
mm-hmm.
get the ball back with a chance to now determine the end of the game.
Yeah. It's a very interesting thought because the
– All of this, by the way, is also if you just defended a little bit more
yes.
when you had a 23-point lead.
Yes.
The game was not analytically final.
Yes. I mean, that doesn't happen until, like
– the second half.
Yes. Yes. You can't – a game wouldn't – Gosh, I wonder what it would have to be in the first half to be analytically final. I wonder if Haslam has ever worked that out. But, yes, that's a very interesting thought because he's worked out first
half
scenarios?
Yeah, he's got a chart for first half.
Okay.
Eric Haslam, he's got these scenarios where if you are up by so much with so much time, a certain time left in the ball game, the game is analytically final, which means what? That statistically nobody ever comes back from it?
Or yes, yes. That it's now beyond what anyone has ever done to come back from a deficit that big.
Yeah.
And I know, like, with 8 seconds left, it's still something like 7 points or 6 points because it's been done before of, like,
yeah.
I mean, Illinois almost did this at Michigan State
yeah.
of hit a three, get a steal.
Hit a three.
Hoist another three. But,
yeah, but there's some deficit that exists analytically with some amount of time where you've effectively won the game because nobody has ever come back from that.
Yep. Yeah. Let me put a bow on
Illinois all. Was not close to that, but it felt that way in the first half.
Let me put a bow on all this because this is what I'm writing about right now that I've been working on here. Illinois in these four games, you know, we just talked about it. Last second three from Nebraska, overtime, buzzer beater at USC in overtime. Here's how I come down on those things. I do believe there's such a thing as clutch. I do believe there's such a thing as IO. You know, if you have an IO, you have a better chance in those games. And I do believe there's such a thing as choking. And there's such a thing as team all looked around and like, who's going to solve this? Why is this lead slipping away? There's such a thing as that. There's also such a thing as we were talking earlier, we'll call it luck or whatever. If a team is 4-0 in those scenarios, yeah, you're getting pretty lucky to win all four of those close games. If you're 0-4, let's be honest, you're a little unlucky. So I look at these four games as simply this. If Illinois was 4-0 these games, I would say, gosh, really lucky to be undefeated in those four, like right down to the wire games. 3-1, let's call that one the clutch one, okay? You know, let's say, yep, they stood up to the test and did that. 2-2, that's the expectation. Close games, right down to the wire, like you said when we opened here, a little thing here, one rebound there, one thing there. 2-2 is probably the expectation when you're playing right down to the wire games. 1-3, a little choky, let's call it that. Let's say maybe you should be 2-2, but you did some things that, boy, you just really didn't, nobody was ready for the moment. 0-4, I'm calling that unlucky. You know, 0-4, I'm just going to say, look, really should have, at least one of these games, a bounce should have gone Illinois' way at some point. To be 0-4 in all four of these games, that's not fair. That's not fair, universe. Like, this, there should be at least one, even if they're chokers, even if we're going to say, like, oh, they just aren't ready for the moment, whatever. To be tied with a second left in all four games or whatever the stat was. I guess it depends on when Jake Davis made the free throws at Michigan State when that game was tied in regulation, whatever the time was on the clock. But to be tied in all four of these games with a second left and to lose all four, that's a lot of unluck.
You're like Daft Punk.
Oh, boy.
You had a delayed red-eye flight, so you ended up being up all night because you were unlucky.
I was up all night, yes.
You were unlucky.
Up all night to get unlucky. Maybe that's the episode title. We're up all night to get unlucky.
We'll come right back on Light the Eye, talk a little bit about the Diamond Sports. Light the Eye is presented today in part by Logic Co-working at the corner of Neal and St. Mary's in Champaign. Logic Co-working is a great environment for you to be productive in whatever it is you need to be productive in. Are you a remote worker who needs some semi-permanent office space? They've got room for you. Do you just need some table space or a cubicle? They also have that set up for you. Are you a professor at the U of I who just wants to get out of the office a little bit into a different space to do some thinking, reading, or writing, whatever it might be? Maybe you're a student who needs some time to study. They've got discounts for you. Logic Co-working offers fast internet, printing, a kitchen, and there's a friendly and reliable staff for you. So whether you're just in town for a few days or you work here but need a place to do something different, or you have a remote job, check out Logic Co-working at the corner of Neal and St. Mary's in Champaign. Light the Eye is presented by the U of I Credit Union. Promised my son I would remind everybody to like and subscribe. YouTube, Apple, Spotify is how you can consume us. And we so much appreciate all the feedback we get. We got listener questions. Some people are very curious about your time in California, Robert. So we'll have to see if you know.
We can cover that on the next episode.
Yeah, the in and out. That's a question.
Line was too long. I didn't do it.
Okay. producer is Maisie Garrett. Hello, Maisie. Amazing Maisie.
Hello.
Is that her official nickname?
I think so. Okay. Are you okay with that? Did you have a nickname when you played sports?
I had a volleyball coach once call me Maze Runner, which I wasn't a huge fan of, but I have been Amazing Maisie and Maisie Grace by an old gymnastics coach.
Okay.
Speaking of gymnastics and somebody amazing, yesterday at the State Farm Center, Illinois Women's Gymnastics hosted UCLA, and they have this gymnast. I don't know if you've heard of her, Robert. Her name's Jordan Chiles. And Maisie, you were on the call for it. on Big Ten Plus. What was that experience like?
So actually wasn't on the call, unfortunately, just reporting. But
want me to do that again? I'll do that again.
You can if you want to.
Speaking of gymnastics and amazing gymnasts, yesterday Illinois women's gymnastics hosted UCLA, and I don't know if you've heard of her, Lauren, or Robert. You're not Lauren. Old habits.
I do kind of look like him.
Actually, now that I think about it, you don't.
No, yeah, now that I think about it, not
you look
the
nothing
slightest.
Like him.
Not the least.
But you could do worse than to be compared to Lauren Tate.
Yes, I love it.
No, Jordan Childs. I don't know if you've heard her.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Maisie, you were there covering the event. What was that like?
It was really cool. You know, used to seeing a somewhat filled up Huff Hall for gymnastics meets. So getting to see a pretty full State Farm Center for them was amazing. You know, granted, it was mostly for Jordan Childs. Coach Nilsson knew that. But he said, you know, hopefully bring some Illini fans along. But Jordan just put on a show. She was absolutely amazing. She's been super consistent this season. Before coming to Illinois, scored four consecutive 10s on floor, which is outstanding. She was so, so close. Yesterday, scored a 9.75, which means one judge gave her a 10. The other said there was something a little bit wrong. But she was amazing defending her national lead and all around. She's just so much fun to watch.
Greatest gymnast in the country?
Yes. Yeah. You know, Chloe Cho's not too far behind. She held her own. She put up 9.95 on bars yesterday. She's sixth nationally on all around. She's amazing. She actually, she for sure went on visits to UCLA for when she was being recruited. She might have been committed at some point and switched, but I'm not fully sure about that.
Well, this the Jordan Childs experience reminds me of the Winter Olympics that we just saw, because figure skating is similar in my mind. It's an athletic competition, but it's judged, and there's also this whole entertainment aspect of it, and different athletes probably approach it in a little bit different way. But Jordan Childs knows she's there to entertain in a way, and and gymnastics encourages you, and so does figure skating, to play to the crowd a little bit, and she's rewarded for it. But it's really cool how it's entirely different, I should say, than, hey, who can run the fastest on this thing or hit the thing the farthest or score the most points by shooting a basketball? It's all this stuff combined.
Yeah, for sure. And it's really interesting, too, because she is, in a way, athlete coming in, but the crowd just erupted for her. Sometimes they were louder for UCLA's team than they were for Illinois, which was crazy to hear. And then Jordan's just running out on the floor, dancing, waving, getting the crowd dancing along to whatever song. So it's weird how, not weird in a bad way, just different how she's able to take control of those away environments, whether she's competing or not. And it was just very interesting. You know, everybody, anywhere she walked around stadium, there's little fans yelling, Jordan, Jordan, trying to get her attention. So she just takes command of her audience, and everyone she's around. And I will say, she was standing right next to me for a little bit during the floor routine, and I was like, do I say something? No, we'll keep it professional. Keep it professional.
I've had a few of those moments before.
Yes, have I.
Hey, aren't you okay? Uh-huh. Like when Bill Murray slipped by me at the Elite Eight game.
I mean, I had that moment on Saturday night at the airport. I sit down at the airport bar, and Tim Brando sits down next to me. And I, you know, do I say something? And I'm like, hey, did you call the Illinois game today? But yes, I kept it professional, said nothing. I am that guy, though. I'm the Chris Farley kind of, like, hey, you remember that one time?
Well, very cool. And gymnastics lends itself to a lot of positivity.
Definitely.
There's points scored. You're trying to beat the other squad, but
the crowd,
it's not a let's boo them.
Yes, the crowd appreciates the skill in something like gymnastics more than just the, you know, I've only been to one other gymnastics meet. I wasn't at this one, but I've been to one, and it's had that same vibe of, like, somebody does something really great on the floor or sticks a landing on something, the crowd is into it, whatever team you're on, you know, even for other meets. So I kind of like that. I kind of like that, you know, look, what was it? 6,800 people in the State Farm Center?
Yeah, 6,800.
I mean, that's pretty crazy to come out and see an athlete. That's pretty cool. I like it. I like it a lot.
I thought you were about to say, look, I've only seen one gymnastics meet, but I think I could go do a vault.
You kidding me? How hard is the high bar?
You know, maybe not a Yachenko, but I could do a vault.
Can Robert hang on the high bar for 10 seconds?
Very cool, Maisie. All right, I just returned from a trip to South Carolina. Illinois had four games scheduled. One of them got washed out against two were against VCU. The Illini split those two. The other was against Coastal Carolina, ranked number six in the country. The reigning runners-up, as they lost to LSU last summer in the Men's College World Series final.
And the bats came alive.
They did. Look, remember a couple of episodes ago, I showed you my scorebook.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when a game hasn't happened, it's, you know, it's blank. Look at that. There's a lot of ink in the scorebook.
Squares filled in.
Yeah, when you score 14 runs on 17 hits. And A.J. Putty's freshman, five hits.
What, grand slam, three doubles?
Yes.
That's gonna boost the stats a little bit.
Yep. Admittedly, the grand slam was a bit of a wall scraper. Mm-hmm. Just made it out.
They all count the same. Look, when I long jump 10 foot 1 inch, it's...
You cleared 10. That was the bar.
That's right.
Yeah, if the bar had been a little bit further out, or when the bar is a little bit further out.
Yes.
I've put in a request, by the way, to see if we can borrow a long jump pit.
I'll start stretching now.
As soon as we get one.
Yes.
And by the way, indoor championships are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we get one, we're gonna set this up to see if you can actually long jump 10 feet. Spoiler alert, you can't. But we will do that. But anyway, this was a big boost win for Illinois. Baseball, going back to our last segment, is seemingly the sport of randomness.
Yes.
So one game does not dictate everything. But the emotional and psychological lift that this can provide, because it showed the team what you're capable of against another very good team. Coastal's down a few arms.
Mm-hmm.
Grant you that. The other thing that was kind of cool, I think actually their coach said, I heard on the post game that he had said on the post game, Coastal's coach said, the cold might have affected the guys a little bit. Mm-hmm. It was chilly yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was one of those, by the end of the game, the sun was out. And if you're just standing outside, it's like 55, mm-hmm. but the wind's blowing. And it was kind of abnormally chilly for them.
Advantage Illinois. Right?
Advantage
Illinois. Yeah.
That weather, it's like, hey, boys, we're outside today. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And people in the South will kind of like, oh, yes. Let's bundle up. So maybe that helped things. But it was a great day. And it was the 600th win for Dan Hartland.
I mean, what a way to do it. Number six in the country, right? Mm-hmm. What's the last, I remember a couple years ago beat Coastal. But what's the, I mean, I know in baseball it's not like individual win. It's like, did you win a series? But with one game like this, this is the biggest ranked win in a while, right?
It's the biggest ranked win on the road since Illinois beat LSU in 2009, early in the season. Mm-hmm. LSU was ranked number one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how things turned out that season. Preseason rankings or early season rankings.
Sure.
Again, we know how that goes.
Yep.
But it's the highest ranked win for Illinois since 2009. And the first time they beat a top 10 team since the 15 season when they went to Oklahoma State and I think took two of three against the Cowboys. I think they were ranked 10.
Mm.
So to me, Illinois 3-4. There's a lot of work left to do. And below, there's a lot of ball games left. But from sort of a disappointing first weekend to... Okay, we're doing something here. That's encouraging. Now the next step is to roll things over.
Okay, let's talk lineup then. So, you know, you and I have talked that like a lot of like, what's the outfield going to be? You know, first base? Is it going to be putty? You know, all that. You think everything's getting set now as to what Dan's going to do?
No. I mean, I still think there's several pieces that could have a case to be in the lineup every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a few guys that you just, they're in the lineup every day.
Sure.
And then there's a few guys that are, it's going to be matchup dependent and or if they continue to progress in a certain direction.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Right now there's a platoon situation going on in the middle infield. Michael Farina is in every game at either short or second base. And then the other middle infielder is either Jack Zeebig or J.R. Nelson. I don't know what the first plan was with catching, but you're both catchers, Daniel Contreras and Will Johannes, justify themselves in the lineup. So
one is a DH, one is a...
That's what it's been lately, but that's then going to leave an outfielder out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Nick Groves didn't start one or play in one game. Cole Wareheim sat out a game for the outfield. Colin Jennings, he's going to be in every game in the outfield. Braden Mazzucano is getting a try in the outfield now. So your third base is Kyle Shutman. He's going to be there every day.
Mm-hmm.
A.J. Putty, as a true freshman, has established himself as going to be in the lineup every day.
Put him in ink.
Yep.
Okay.
So there's still question marks. I mean, the when Illinois has lost, it's been because of some of small things that didn't get done.
Mm-hmm.
Usually on defense.
Was it?
Or missed opportunities at the plate.
Was it Reagan Hall yesterday? Who was pitching yesterday?
Yeah, Reagan Hall and Kyle Remington. And for the second straight weekend, they both did all the innings in that game.
Got it.
And won.
Got it. So now where? There's another trip, right? This weekend?
Yeah, back to South Carolina to Greenville. They'll play Michigan State. It'll be a non-conference game.
I love those.
Yes. College of Charleston and Albany.
Got it.
It's really more of an Albany expression.
What was the flight like? I mean, this is a little, I'm not going to go Cardinals and go happy flight here. Shout out a Cardinal team from 15 years ago. But what was the flight like? I mean, it had to be a boost, right? Like you just beat number six.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they get everybody seated and they remind you to buckle up and there's a safety demonstration.
Mm-hmm.
And then... you know, they push back from the gate, you taxi and take off.
Yes. And then what happens?
There's a beverage service.
Okay. Yes.
A lot of people are...
Did you go peanuts or pretzels? Oh, sorry. You can't do peanuts anymore.
I got the biscotti.
Oh, you got it with you? Oh, yeah. I always go cookies.
Yeah, they gave me second biscotti. Where'd it go?
The Bischoff or whatever?
Yes.
Looking, this... this is where I'm supposed to fill in. This is like, I don't have the radio background. Like when the other host is digging through his bag, it's dead air. So you've got to say something. So this is where Robert talks about why he didn't go to In-N-Out. Oh, look, you found it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the Biscoff that you only get on American Airlines.
Okay, now you can answer the question as to how happy was the team on the flight, on the bus. Where was someone on the aux on the bus on the way back? I'm just picturing
what happens on a bus stays on a bus.
Yes.
But I can tell you the vibe after a win on a bus is very different than the vibe after a loss.
And the vibe after beating number six, 14-5 was the final?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a booster on a Sunday.
Yeah. So hopefully that turns into some positive momentum because baseball, there's a game the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, or in this case, in a few days.
Yep. And starts the season starts out at USC, right?
Yes.
Is that when I was looking at the schedule, I was like, you know, that's probably smart. I wonder if USC has like a home series throughout March because they know the weather will be good, and then they start to go on the road in April or something.
Well, the Big
like
Ten
that.
Dictates it.
Yeah.
So who gets home and who doesn't early in the season? Because after that weekend, Illinois is hosting two straight weekends in March at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we all know what March can be around here.
Yeah.
It could be beautiful and it could be miserable.
Yep.
So I don't know how that gets all done, but
it's
the way it is. You just put them on, lace them up, and let's go.
That's right.
Speaking of milestone victories, so Dan Hartlib got 600 wins, and he's already the winningest coach in Illinois history. But Tyra Perry hit her 700th career win.
Mm.
she's done that over multiple stops, so not just at Illinois. Mm-hmm. But over the same weekend, both Diamond Sport head coaches reached milestone wins. So I thought that was pretty cool. Between the two of them, they won 1,300 ball games.
I just realized here that when you held up your scorebook earlier, I said a whole bunch of squares filled in. You know, a square, when you tilt it on the side, Robert, is called a diamond.
There you
and
go.
And you have a bunch of diamonds filled in, especially in the first two innings.
Yes.
That is a, how many did they score in the first two?
12.
12 in the first two innings.
Yeah.
Chased how many pitchers?
First two innings. They used two pitchers in the first two innings.
And they put up 12 runs.
Yeah.
So. That's pretty solid.
Yep, good win.
Yeah, it's funny. I forget where I was. I changed planes at O'Hare. I had some travel
issues. Oh, yeah, let's
hear
your flight story.
Yes.
Everybody loves flight stories.
No, I was going to say, I'm like, oh, I can listen to the end of the baseball game. So I get to the gate where my connecting flight is. I sit down. I pull it up on my phone. And I hear your voice closing out the broadcast. I didn't know the game had gone that quickly. And like, and that's a win number 600 for it. So I listened to zero of the game. I think I tuned in 1 second after the final out for you to just frame it all, and then I got out of the app, and that was that.
Well, so nice of you to listen.
Sure.
And I didn't have the stress of running over because women's hoops started right after that, and they won at Northwestern, so they won three
in
a row.
Big, yeah.
Yeah, they blew them out.
Yeah.
They have a game at Iowa this Thursday. Iowa's second in the Big Ten. UCLA has, by the way, already won the Big Ten in women's basketball. It's already clinched it.
Yeah, they showed, I think, they showed somebody on the screen at the game, UCLA players. I don't know if it was Lauren Betts, but they showed somebody on the screen. I was looking down, and I hear a big ovation kind of thing, and they love it there. They also had the, bring it back to the gymnastics, they brought out the 84 Pac-12 or National Championship gymnastics team, and it was a bunch of guys from that 84 Olympic team, basically, who had gone to UCLA for gymnastics. So they honored them at the during one of the timeouts at UCLA. That's one of the biggest takeaways for me out there, is they both UCLA and USC are very much into their other sports.
Yes.
Like, the banners in the arenas will have gymnastics banners and this, and there's this massive thing at the end that just says fight on at USC and then lists the total national championships in all sports. And, you know, the arena at UCLA has all these things as you walk around and this and that about gymnastics and about softball and about, you know, all that kind of stuff.
It's Pac-12 was the conference of champions.
Yes, yes. And so it's a totally different vibe out there of, like, we care about every sport, where you get to the Midwest and it is a, hey, basketball and football reign supreme. So it's just interesting to visit these other places and see how they handle stuff like that.
All right. The big question between now and the next time that we meet here on Light the Eye is, what color will the eye be? We got through an episode with a blue eye, which mm-hmm. was only ever done previously
in Nashville, yes. Navy for Nashville. Yes.
Yes. Because the Illini requested everyone mm-hmm. wear blue in that game against Tennessee. In this case, I don't know if it's a blue eye because it's sad and Illinois lost, but it's really just because the eye is not working for some reason. So we'll see if you can get it back to orange between now and then.
Yes, I might have to do a little eye surgery. Hey, we're going to bring in the, hey, it's eye surgery, just like my dad who was an optometrist. Well, that's not really surgery, but that's for another day.
All right. Thanks to Maisie Garrett for our production today, and a job well done. For Robert Rosenthal, I'm Scott Beatty. Thanks for tuning in, watching and listening, liking and subscribing. We'll talk to you again next time when we light the eye.